Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest tonight is gaming analyst Ken Adams. Ken writes regularly for the CDC Gaming Reports, and we'll be talking to him tonight about several of his recent articles. We've been having a contest recently about picking a logo for a radio program. The contest is over, and we have a winner. That winner is Nicholas from Los Angeles. We had numerous entries, and each of the entries was superior to anything I could come up with, and we thank all of you for those entries. As you may remember, the announced prize for the logo was either $1 million or two books, our choice. Which prize to award was really a tough decision for Munch and me, but we decided to go with the books. Rich and I have bunches of books between us, and we'll have to find out which one Nicholas wants.
Right. We also have some extra copies of Whale Hunt in the Desert that Steve Sear left us quite a while back. So we could give him that as well.
Or maybe all of the above. Yeah. First prize is two books. Second prize is three books. Okay. Full Tilt is back in the news. Apparently the last of the owners, Ray Bitar, pleaded guilty to conspiracy to commit bank and wire fraud. He received a hefty fine, but will avoid prison time. The case now appears to be closed against all the former owners, and American players are still out some $160 million that was deposited in the company. We keep hearing that restitution will be done. The site is up and running, but so far it hasn't happened. In a few weeks, we're going to have attorney I. Nelson Rose on the show, and we'll definitely ask him about this. Do you have any thoughts about this, Richard?
No, I mean, everybody is, you know, turning over tens of millions of dollars. I mean, all of the, Chris Ferguson, Howard Lederer, Ray Bitar. I don't know if the government's going to just lock all that up and trying to get poker stars to, you know, pay off these people or, you know, but boy, if I had money sitting in Full Tilt all this time, I wouldn't be happy about all this time I've been waiting to get paid.
Yes, for sure they're unhappy, and there's anxiety of will it ever happen. Being told it'll happen is different than actually having the check in your hand.
But I guess they're still in a better position than the people who had money at Ultimate Bet.
Yes, they are. All right. There was a recent article that suggested that video games might be going Vegas. What do you know about this, Munch?
Yeah, I just saw an article this week. So there was a site called bringit.com where you could – it was started, I think, in 2009, and you could gamble at, you know, Wii or Xbox, PlayStation games. So that was kind of cool. But now that company has been bought by IGT. And
they're rather a large organization.
You know, one of the biggest – manufacturers of slot machines.
The biggest by far.
Yeah. So, this may be, the future, or at least a lot of people are betting on this being the future. And, you know, my son would certainly like to get into gambling at Madden. So, we'll have to wait and see what happens. But certainly these are games of skill. And, gambling with an edge could certainly be done at these games if you've put in the time to really get good.
Is there enough, I mean, like in chess isn't a good gambling game because if you're better than me, you're going to beat me 100 out of 100 or 99 out of 100 anyway. Whereas backgammon, if you're better than me, you might win 60 out of 100. And so the backgammon is more likely to be a better gambling game. Now, these video games we're talking about, are they, if your son was good at Madden, is he always going to win? Or is there enough of a variation so that it could be something to gamble on?
You know, I don't know the answer to that. I don't know how much luck is involved. I think one of the reasons that backgammon is such a tremendous gambling game is because there's enough skill involved where the better player is going to win and enough luck involved where the losers think they got unlucky. And I just don't know about these online games, how much luck there is involved. But I would say that, people need to be careful. Just like when poker and backgammon went online and people started playing, you know, bots were created and, you know, cheating was happening. So, I would be very careful before risking much money at something like this.
Yeah, this article that inspired this part of the segment started out by a quote from John Akers, who has been in gaming for years and years and years and years, and he's predicting the machines are going away and that they're losing interest. The players are losing interest in gambling in casinos, and I think that's a bad judgment, where there's currently, due to the recession that started about 6 years ago, that gambling has tapered off, but we're coming out of the recession. And so I don't think the last 6 years are going to be highly indicative of what the next 10 years are all about.
Well, but I think that everybody seems to think, and I'm sure Ken Adams will have a lot to say about this, but everyone seems to think that the future is mobile gaming. I think people are going to be playing all these gambling games, slot machines or whatever, on their phones, as opposed to sitting at banks and casinos. But who knows?
Speaking of Ken Adams, let's talk to him. Ken Adams writes for the CDC Gaming Reports. This is a daily service that culls gambling information from several hundred sources around the country and around the world. In addition to this daily culling, several times a month, he writes a column called Ken's Commentary about something in the gaming news department. You may read these columns at cdcgamingreports.com. Ken Adams, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thank you.
This is your second visit here. We hope it's the second of many. New Jersey used to be the second largest casino market in the United States, behind only Nevada. How are the New Jersey casinos doing these days?
I believe somebody just said that there's been a six-year recession decline, and New Jersey has had exactly 6 years of decline. It's about 40% less than what it was in 2006, the gaming revenues in New Jersey.
But now, I mean, a lot of that must be the opening of Pennsylvania and Maryland as well, right?
Probably all of it, although some has to be attributed to the recession and Sandy. But it's difficult to put a number on those. However, it's easy to put one on Pennsylvania, for example. Pennsylvania had, I believe, about $800 million more in gaming revenues in 2012 than New Jersey did. And in 2006, of course, they had none.
So Pennsylvania is now the second most gaming-oriented state, and New Jersey slipped to third.
Second in revenue.
Uh-huh. Do you expect that? Does your crystal ball say that it's going to continue that way, or there's going to be a new number two, or New Jersey's going to take it back, or something like that? What would your crystal ball tell you, Ken?
Well, one of the pieces you referred to, one of the things I said is it isn't what it used to be, and you can't just look at it and say which casino state, because you can say that Pennsylvania is second in the casino states, but it's not second because Florida generates more gambling revenue than Pennsylvania does when you add up all those. And the state that generates the most, almost exactly the same in Nevada, is California.
So California,
when you say that, you're adding in lottery, horse racing.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
High lie in the case of Florida.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So California has as much gaming revenue as Nevada.
Yes.
Interesting. That I didn't know.
Now, you in your article today in talking about Atlantic City, you were saying that the Wall Street analysts think there are too many casinos open in Atlantic City and would like to see a couple of them close. But, I mean, if you own a casino, nobody wants to say, okay, I'll just close mine to help everybody else. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just seems absurd for them to – I mean, how what are they thinking?
You know, I don't know. I don't work on Wall Street. But they said there were two different people that are quoted in that, and one of them said just that there's too much capacity for this market, and until you lose some capacity, no one can do very well. So you need to take off 10,000 slot machines off the floor or something, and that's kind of all he was saying, that given the amount of revenue and the number of customers, there's too much capacity. One of the other ones said, I think we ought to that the state ought to buy them and bulldoze two of them down. Boop! And
but
build
the state
as MGM
buy them. Wow.
proposed today a nice little green space.
Now, one of these is the Atlantic Casino, which was recently...
Atlantic Club, yeah.
Atlantic Club, which was recently purchased by an online poker...
Yeah, it's in the process, PokerStars. It's in the process, and... there was a bit today that said that a 90-day period to review the license application. They accepted the application as being complete on April 10th, and they have 90 days to review it and to make some decision. So we should know in 90 days whether or not that sale is going to go through.
Now, it also seems like New Jersey is really gambling on, well, they're trying to get sports betting, and they're trying to get online gambling.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, I think that's why PokerStars bought the casino, is because then they would have a presence and be able to go after
absolutely.
One of the licenses for online gambling.
That's what everybody thinks. Everybody thinks that this is a way for PokerStars to purge their past and to become acceptable to American jurisdictions.
Now, also in Atlantic City is the Revel, which... opened up a little over a year ago. It's gorgeous. It's
bankrupt,
and it's recently gone through bankruptcy. Uh-huh. And they have a no smoking policy.
They do.
As a personal human, I like the no smoking policy approach. As a gambler, I bet former co-host Michael Shackelford by the end of 2013 that there would be smoking would be allowed in the Revel. What is your handicapping of whether or not I'm going to win that $100 bet?
I think that's almost 100% certain. They have submitted already the paperwork for what they propose as their smoking area and how they're going to do it to get regulatory approval.
So I'll just have to notify Shaq and I'll let him out for $95. What do you think? And he'd be making money on that, huh? Ain't gonna happen. All right. Briefly, when we were talking about Atlantic City, we talked about online gaming. There's been whole bunches of online gaming news since the last time you were on our show. What can you tell us about this?
Well, first in Atlantic City, the most recent one, is Caesars has just applied for a New Jersey online license. Theirs is the first formal application that I know of, whereas Nevada has 30 of them so far. And nobody knows that there's no regulatory detail in Atlantic City. Nobody knows what it means, but they've applied for the first one. I think one of the biggest ones is a tribe in Nevada, and the Shoshone is going to start an online site, and everybody says in the beginning that there's going to be I'm looking for my notes here. They said in the beginning that they're all going to that they're not for money site, but one tribe in Oklahoma got a federal ruling that they could conduct real money gambling outside the United States, as long as no one in the United States was allowed to play. And so I think that as the states are moving along individually, the tribes are also moving along individually. And the more moving parts, the more difficult it's going to be for federal regulation to ever pull those back in.
If you're gambling on the if you're gambling on the reservation, is that considered in the United States, or is that considered a separate country?
No, that's in the United States.
Uh-huh.
So in the beginning, they'd only be able to take foreign.
Right.
But now, when you said there are 30 licenses pending in Nevada, is that for poker only?
Yeah, Nevada's regulation is poker, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But online gambling they're trying to do is everything, right?
New Jersey is, yeah. And most other places, it differs in every location. What they see is the opportunity. New Jersey wants gambling. No
right.
restrictions. Some places are just Illinois, Pennsylvania. They're just talking right now about lottery, although each of those has an implication that's going to be video slots, too. The slots will be part of it.
But
each
jurisdiction
is a little different.
You have to live within the state, right? You can't gamble across state lines on these things?
What the lottery directors have thought, and this is kind of being led by the director of the lottery of Iowa, is that if the states create the enabling legislation to do it within the states, then the separate states can negotiate with each other form a compact, and then the citizens of either of those two states can gamble with each other. The Iowa director also believes that will give him the ability to plug in Europe and the rest of the world to that little network, and that a little bit at a time, his lottery could host online gambling in every other jurisdiction where it was legal. And not in the United States as one jurisdiction, but Delaware, Florida, Nevada, Illinois, Pennsylvania, the ones that are already moving along towards that, plus all the Indian tribes.
And if you had to guess, Ken, when we would be able to actually start playing online, gambling online, do you think that's 1 year out, 5 years out? Or you wouldn't want to pick a guess and make a guess?
You know, I couldn't make a guess because I can't. Every jurisdiction is so different. It's going to happen. I think it's going to happen in lottery before it happens anyplace else. At one of those lottery directors, and again, the guy in Iowa is the leading one because he believes the enabling legislation that created the lottery gives him the authority to put his game online without anything else, and in that process take in video lottery terminals so that he can do gambling online that would be the lottery and lottery terminals, which would be poker also.
That flies, presumably the Nevada legislature will change the law here in Nevada so they can try to do the same thing. They're not going to stick with poker if their competition is going after everything.
But the lobby in Nevada, the lobby in Nevada is the Resorts Association. And the Resorts Association is trying to keep it in it contained, where it will not have in their mind any impact on their bricks and mortars. They've got billions of dollars invested in the industry in the state of Nevada.
Yes, they do.
They don't want people sitting at home and not helping them service the debt on those places.
Except,
I think they're really short-sighted in thinking that way, because if they can, you know, if they can assert their brand for people to gamble online at an MGM property and then give them comps so that, you know, they build up comps so that they can come stay in Las Vegas or somewhere else at an MGM property. I mean, I think they're missing the boat if they try to wall it off. But,
well, Caesars certainly believes that, and Caesars has the largest database. Caesars has 30 million in their database. Caesars certainly believes that. MGM may believe that, but not all the operators believe that it's a good thing for them. And in any case, in Nevada, they've tried to contain it. The Nevada legislation did not envision you being able to play slot machines online, 21 online, sportsbook. They didn't envision anything but poker.
You know, I just want to say for our listeners that, you know, this idea of online gambling prior to 2006 when they changed the law, this was by far the greatest opportunity for advantage gamblers in my lifetime. So, you know, this is something that's really important for people to be aware of, the opportunity that may be coming. So, you know, sometimes people lose sight of that, thinking, well, you can't count cards on an online casino, but there are other ways to beat these games that are good for advantage gamblers.
Can you hold card online casinos?
No, you can't.
Can you spook them? Can you... But good, but there's a sign-up bonus hustling.
Well, certainly, yep. Poker players, there were lots of people who threatened to leave the country over it because they had been making a very good living playing online, and it advanced poker immensely. You know what it did for the World Series of Poker. I mean, it was a revolution in poker until they shut it down.
Yeah, a lot of players did leave the country to continue playing.
There was a recent article that the bankers at Morgan Stanley are predicting online gaming is going to be bigger than casino gaming in the relatively near future. Is that correct? Am I quoting that right, as far as you know, Ken?
What's their number? Let's see if I've got it real. They've got, estimated 9.3 billion in 2020. So that's not larger than the industry, but would be equivalent to, it'd be larger than the Strip, for example. It'd be larger than Atlantic City by a factor of three.
Well, and presumably some of those dollars have to be coming from Atlantic City and the Strip. So if those numbers are that size, then the numbers at the land-based casinos must be going on.
Well, the legislature in Atlantic City was very aggressive about the numbers that they had cited about the potential revenue for Atlantic City. And one of the legislators asks and the other, where'd you get those numbers anyway? What are those assumptions based on? And I certainly don't understand it. I don't know where they picked those numbers up and how they just... maybe they pick them from the history of online gambling before the Fed shut it down, or what it's doing.
Right. I think the year that it was shut down, that they did $10 billion to online gambling. I mean, maybe they're thinking it'll take until 2020 to spread far enough, you know, across the United States.
So
I hope it doesn't take that long.
Let's move on a little bit. There's a story recently about a bus accident in Texas that may end up leading to casinos in Texas. Now, how does that happen, Ken?
Well, that comment was premature. By the time that comment was, the ink was dry on it, the following day, the committee that was hearing it decided not to take it out of committee and let it rest in committee, so it'll probably stay there for the rest of the year. But simply what happened is Texas annually has some kind of gaming legislation come up. A number of bills are introduced, bills by the racetracks, bills by the in favor of the Indian tribes, bills that just want casinos all over, bills that something, some form of they have a pretty vibrant illegal or gray area slot machine industry, eight liners in Texas, and legitimizing that is also comes up. So anyway, they come up every year. They get voted down every year. And this year, just as they were in the midst of having the pretty heated debate over it, there was a bus accident. The bus was on its way, 40 people, I suppose, on its way to an Indian casino. And the numbers that came out were some $1 billion a year leaves Texas and goes to Oklahoma or New Mexico to gamble, and or Louisiana. And so that fed the argument a little, because that's always part of the argument. Let's keep the dollars at home. A, we're losing the dollars that have multiple effects. When people spend the money in a casino, then the casinos spend money hiring and all buying stuff and all that. And B, it has tax implications. But if it goes to another state, we don't get any of the benefits. So let's keep that money at home. It's always one of the arguments, not just in Texas, but everywhere. So that bus was a graphic illustration of that money is going out. Real people were, and several people were killed. So it was a real illustration of what happened. And I speculated that it might have an impact on the legislation, but it didn't.
All right. Other new possible casinos, Mexico, Philippines, stuff like that, they've been in the news.
Well, in the one about Mexico, I said Mexico is like Texas, that it comes up every year. It gets voted down every year. And like Texas, it also has some kind of a gray area. Something is going on because there's certainly lots of casinos in Mexico, even though they don't seem to be completely legal. Some jurisdictions, somebody allows them by some folks, and we, at least what I see in the press, we get hints of it when somebody closes the doors on them and burns them down and kills 30 people. Then we say, oh, that was a casino, wasn't it? When they argue about whether or not he was going to pay the gangs to protect him. But they'll discuss it again. September, I think, is always when the legislation comes up in Mexico, and there's always the same thing as Texas. People always say, well, it's going to happen sometime. It looks like it's going to happen this time, and then it doesn't. But at the same time, something continues to function there. And I really don't know the particulars on it, but I only see something surfaces like that.
Now, in the Philippines, they did open the Solare, I guess it's called, the big new casino, opened last month. Have you heard anything about how it's doing?
No. I've seen the video tours of it and the anecdotal, it's doing very well and all of that. It's like the Strip in Macau. It's envisioned as having, I think, four or five hotels and two or three casinos when it's finished, and be somewhere in the neighborhood of $6 or $8 billion worth of total investments. And this is the first one to open. The next one will open a year from now, and the second one, they're getting the financing and they're getting started on it. And it's Packers Company from Australia.
Right. The hype is that this is going to be bigger than Macau, which I don't really understand, since Macau's a lot closer to the Chinese than connected by land.
Yeah, that's the hype.
China has more people than the
Philippines. That was one of my caveats in there, is the Philippine press is always so hyper, and they exaggerate everything, that I take everything from that comes out of the Philippines with a grain of salt. I don't believe it until I've read it four or five times and seen some pictures before I start to believe it. But they can't.
Although
can't
I did hear that there are a lot of Chinese that are hoping to get money out of the country, and so that may take them to the Philippines for these gambling.
But in the meantime, they're using Macau for the same thing. It's Even though there isn't already casinos there, it's going to Taiwan, it's going lots of places where they're going out and doing something with it. And yes, that's the Chinese, you know, the Macau is the closest to 1.6 billion people. It's a long ways to the Philippines. And I'm sure that it'll do well, but even Singapore does very well, but it's still, of course, it's more limited, but it's still not Macau.
Right, right. And I mean, but that's really kind of a misnomer. I mean, the 1.6 billion people, it's really 300 million people who have any money. You know, the other 1.3 billion are impoverished. So.
Well, and also the whole country is 1.6 billion, and a lot, and it's a huge country land-wise, and so the parts over by Mongolia are nowhere close to Macau.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, true.
One of the
still a lot more people. If you say in the old days, Las Vegas had 300 million people before there was any. For New Jersey, and it had 300 million people, it had all the people in the United States, and it's basically what it had. If that was the market. So, and certainly out of that 300 million, not all of them did, and some of them lived long ways away, and all that same stuff is still true. But that's still the population base. And when they built New Jersey, if you remember, we used to, in Nevada, we said, well, there's 100 million people live within a 100-mile radius of that place. How could they go wrong with that?
Yeah.
And you know, it's and in the beginning they couldn't go wrong with it.
And then
right.
California,
when they had no competition on the East Coast.
Yep.
Oh, even on the West Coast, California is a bit of major competition to Nevada.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You had an article almost a month ago called "Finally Some Good News."
Uh huh.
What was that all about?
Well, you know, it's been a long 6 years.
Of the recession.
Yes. It's been a long 6 years for Nevada, and I don't know about you guys, but I talk to the newspapers in Reno once a month about the gaming revenue numbers, and it's depressing. It's depressing. It just slowly goes down and down and down. It's been a long 6 years, and it seems to me that during that whole time, all of the things that used to be exciting about Las Vegas, all the stuff that used to just jack you up, when your plane was getting ready to land or you walked down the strip because there was just the energy, just seemed to be gone. And suddenly, it seems to be back again. There are new projects being suggested, the one today. As if they were getting ready for us to talk about this tonight. They want to put $100 million into a place outside to do that with the wheels. I don't know what's going to happen with the Ferris non-ferrous wheels and which ones are going to open, which ones aren't. But certainly having three of them proposed is the old Vegas. That's the energy and the excitement that used to be there. Somebody says, I'm going to build one of these, and somebody says, I'm going to build one 10 times bigger and more expensive.
It strikes me that three...
It's so exciting.
Three observation wheels is at least too many, is my gut feeling.
Right. But the announcement today was this place called The Park, I guess, next to in between New York and the Monte Carlo, where they want to build a park with shops and restaurants, and sounds actually really nice.
There's not a lot of room between New York and Monte Carlo. I mean, there's a parking lot there now.
Yeah, well, that's gone. The parking lot will be gone. It kind of goes back toward the freeway from the strip all the way back. But yeah, between that and the place where the old Stardust was, that they had a buyer now, and that's going to start construction. I agree. I think things are exciting in Vegas now. Things are starting to come back.
What about other places around the country, gaming wise, other than Vegas? Is it Atlantic City doesn't seem too excited about their prospects?
Thing I write about Atlantic City is going to be, I think, as a shifting of this, that we might be able to reframe the way we think about it, because there are some new people in town. There's a rumor out today that 10 national was in town last week talking to Caesars about Showboat.
Uh-huh.
And if you were to theorize that were to happen, then you'd have Mohegan Sun, Penn National, Golden Nugget, this little company from Reno that God knows who they are, but they've now bought two of these properties like this for pennies on the dollar to re-envision something, and maybe Poker Stars, and suddenly you have an entirely different town. New people, all the Trump debt is gone, even Rebels is going to have half the debt it had before or less, and I still don't give it a lot of chance, but everybody else is, there's going to be a lot of other new players in town with some new energy and some new money, and I think there's some possibility that you might see something. But the real news, of course, right now is Massachusetts is trying to figure out what casinos are going to be there, and the casinos are going around bidding on different sites and trying to get the communities to, they have to have community support to get the license. So,
how long do you think before those actually move forward?
Another 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
It's a slow process.
And is that, they also, isn't there, they were trying to build a big place in Miami. Is that still on the table?
Well, it's on the table, but it's in committee. What happened was that just ran up against a stone wall, and the same people that bought the old Stardust location are the ones who went to Miami, Genting. They're the ones that have the right now the most profitable slot machines in the world. They have the Racino in Queens. And Genting went to Miami, bought the Miami Herald building, and talked about it, developing a resort and all that. And they said, oh, by the way, it'd be really nice to put a casino in here. We could do this really exclusive thing. And when they did that, of course, then Sheldon Adelson and a bunch of other people ran down there and said, wait, hey, we could do better. And so then they ran around and everybody bragged about what they could do, and the legislature just kind of drugged the whole thing down to a stop. And then this year they appointed a committee to study it, and so they're going to study it. And it'll be next year's legislature before they introduce any legislation that would possibly create a license for Miami.
But they have such a heavy gambling presence already in Florida. It's and they do have casinos in Florida.
Yeah. In Florida, it is not about it's not like Texas. It's a moral objection, or so they say, to it. But in Florida, it's not at all. It has to do with control, I think, and plus the fact they also have their compact with the Seminole tribe gives the Seminoles exclusive to in all the areas, and the Seminoles agreed to pay the state, I don't know, like $3 billion, $4 billion over a course of 6 or 7 years. And so the Seminoles would stop that payment, and at least the short term, it would create a cash flow problem, that the Seminoles would stop that payment, and it would be several years before they started to get any revenue from the casino, so...
Unless they just force, you know, whoever they let in to prepay, yes. You know, the first few years.
Yeah. And Genting is not above that. Most American operators are hesitant to do anything like that. I mean, everybody got scared away with Harrah's in New Orleans when it turned out to be such a disaster, that those heavy upfront costs can be onerous and an expensive bidding process. But we seem to have passed the bidding process where we're bidding so much for those licenses and where the communities expect too much up front. So,
and
I would think it would happen in Florida, but the question is when.
And if Genning is willing to do it, then the others are forced to be willing to do it as well.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Very good. Ken, this was very educational, as last time. We're going to have you on again in a couple months. This is very very enjoyable. Thank you very much for coming on tonight.
Well, thank you.
Those of you who want to read Ken's articles can do so for free online, cdcgamingreports.com. Munch, what did we learn tonight?
Well, that, you know, gaming is expanding everywhere. Things are looking up in Las Vegas, and hopefully internet gambling is coming. In Texas, who knows?
Yeah, I was actually curious. We didn't ask Ken about it because I didn't want to go off subject because he may not have an answer. In Texas, the gambling is largely the Christian right on the moral grounds. And Mexico, which is next door to Texas, is mainly a Catholic nation, which is very different religiously than the Christian right in Texas.
And you know, that's so odd because there's such a gambling tradition in Texas. I mean, there's always been a lot of gambling in Texas, just it was always underground.
Benny. So a lot of them moved to Vegas.
Well, that's true. Yeah, Texas, a lot of them did.
Texas Hold'em was invented there, and very good.
Yep.
All right. The South Point has more than 10,000 video poker games, returning more than 99%. That's more than anyone else. During the month of April, every Sunday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, you get a free swipe if you earn 200 points. Swipes can range between 2,500 points, worth $7.50, through $20 or $50 in free play, including a possible 2x multiplier until midnight of the day swiped. Although the swipes are random, historically they're not equal weighted. If you get big mailers, your swipes tend to be in the large free play amounts. If you get small mailers, you might get a breakfast buffet. But still, even the 2,500 points or 750 for $200 of play, that is a high percentage. Although, unless you live next door, an expected $7.50 may not be enough to warrant you going in for just to try that. Double points in April is Monday, midnight to midnight, no limit. So there's still a couple of Mondays left. At the Palms, the Friday-Saturday night drawings in April are called the $80,000 cash and free slot play drawing. Each night, 10 winners will receive money ranging from a bottom prize of 300 cash and 300 free slot play to a top prize of $1,000 cash and $1,000 free slot play. The drawings are at 8 p.m. based on virtual entries earned since 8 p.m. the previous Saturday. On Friday night and Saturday nights between 8 p.m. and midnight, you earn 3x drawing entries. The Monday, Wednesday, Friday PEW, Play, Earn, and Win, gifts for the last half of the month will have a theme of name brand. They're purses, perfumes, and several other items, including Tide Pods. Do you know what Tide Pods are, Munchkin?
I have no idea.
Well, your wife does the laundry. I bet she knows what Tide Pods are. All right. Tide makes laundry soap. And pods are little wrap things of detergent where the wrapper goes away in the water. So see how educational this is, Munchkin.
There you go. Now you can ask me what we learned tonight.
Oh, Nell, you'll be impressed with this. All right. Now, this month, for the first time, you can redeem your earned points anytime during the week earned. So if you had points earned Monday and Wednesday but not redeemed, tomorrow, Friday, you can use them to get the gifts. At videopoker.com, the free monthly contest in April will be the 24th through the 30th, and that will feature Super Times Pay Poker. Although you don't need to worry about the number of coins in Super Times Pay Poker in the contest, generally speaking in the casino, Super Times Pay is a 6-coin per line bet, where rather than the more typical 5 coins. So you're paid 5 coins per line times the multiplier, the multiplier happens randomly approximately one time in 15. So the nice part about this is the multipliers add about 0.25% to the return of the game. So if it's a 99% game, now it's 99.25, or if it's 9-6 jacks, instead of 99.5, it's about 99.8. And you don't need to change your strategy. So those of you who already know how to play a particular game can do the Super Times Pay version with no changes in strategy. Our guest next week is going to be Nolan Dalla, who'll be talking about this year's World Series of Poker. In 2 weeks, we'll be hearing from lawyer I. Nelson Rose. So Rose is one of our, we have Nersessian and we have Rose on at different times. How would you say they differ, Munchkin?
Bob Nersessian's a trial lawyer, so he represents people, sues people, takes them to court, and tries cases, whereas I. Nelson Rose is more like a legal consultant. He's hired by companies and things like that, and about gaming law as opposed to a trial lawyer.
Very good. Now, this week, every Tuesday, I have an article posted on the Las Vegas Advisor website. It's archived on bobdancer.com. And this week, the article spoke about endowments. What that meant is, let's say you're having two ways to play a video poker hand. If we're thinking about it in advance of the hand, it's fairly easy to compare the EV, expected value, of one play versus another. But when it's happening, if you're dealt a hand, and so you have a guaranteed winner, if you play it one way, and you have to give up that guarantee for something that might have a higher EV, but very often ends up with less, that's a different psychological situation. And a lot of people are very hesitant to give up this endowment. Now, I sent it to Munchkin, and he goes, oh, yeah, that happens in blackjack all the time. So what would that be, Munchkin?
Well, to follow up, your example that you gave was a deuces wild game where you got three deuces and, say, the 6-7 of clubs.
Yes.
So if you just keep that, you have that straight flush, but the right play is to throw away the 6-7 of clubs and draw for the fourth deuce, where you might end up getting a lesser payout. And in blackjack, that happens – with people who want to insure a blackjack. So they've made their big bet. They get a blackjack. The dealer has an ace up, and they know it's wrong to insure the blackjack, but they want to do it because for exactly the same reason. They know they could have this payout. And what I find interesting is you see this thinking even in people who are – I don't want to say professional players, but card counters who should know better. So, this comes up. There's always a lot of discussion about what happened. How much should you bet if you know you're going to get an ace, right? So, and James Grosjean actually worked out the optimal mathematical bet, you know, for this. It's like 42% of your bankroll or something. But so people say, well, if you make this big bet and then you get your blackjack, well, now shouldn't you insure it because you made such a big bet? So, I mean, why they think it's different because of the size of their bet, I don't know, you know. But so this kind of thinking happens to even people who really should know better.
Well, if you made this big bet and you're a counter, and the reason you made the big bet is because the count is sky high, then that's a case where, yes, you should insure it. But that's
right.
That's because the count is sky high, not because it's a big bet.
Right. But in a case where you've bet because you know you're going to receive an ace, you know, the count is not sky high. You just made the bet because you're receiving the ace.
Yes.
And now just, you know, now suddenly they want to give up everything they've learned. You know, if they get a double down, they don't want to do it because they've got such a big bet out, you know. But, you know, EV is EV. So the right play is the right play.
If it's not, then you're playing for higher stakes than are sensible for you to play at.
That's right.
If it's going to make you make foolish plays or non-optimal plays because you're afraid to put the money out, then you should either
you shouldn't have bet that much.
Yeah, reduce the amount you're playing for, or perhaps give up gambling and take up bowling, something like that.
Right.
Now, a few weeks ago, changing subjects again, we spoke about how a given bankroll could cover any number of players. Now, a friend of ours named Mr. Yuck, who actually lives in the state of Washington, wrote in and said this isn't really true if the players are in separate locations. Do you remember this discussion, Richard?
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, certainly on blackjack teams, this is a problem. Even when you are in the same location, you know, if all the players are out playing at the same time and they have the bankroll divided up amongst them, you know, one person can lose all their money and need more, but other people are busy playing or, you know, or in other locations and you can't get the extra money. So, there are bankroll considerations that you have to have when you're playing on teams this way. More than once, I've been trapped in a foreign country where I ran out of money. James Grosstein actually wrote an article in his book, Exhibit CAA, about what to do when you're going to a foreign country. Say you go to a foreign country and you only take, you know, $9,000 with you. How should you bet that? Even, you know, if your bankroll is much higher, but that's the only cash you have. So, yeah, there are all these types of considerations with bankrolls that that have to do with the practicalities of real life as opposed to the mathematical optimal.
All right. We've got 2 minutes, Munch. On your website, richardmunchkin.com, in the last couple days, you wrote an article on learning how to track aces.
Yeah, well, it was about ace sequencing and shuffle tracking, which seem to be the things that people want to do next. You know, they learn to count cards, and they go one of two ways. Either they want to learn a more difficult count or start side counting things, which is really a complete waste of time. Or, you know, there's always a lot of discussion on the message boards about shuffle tracking and ace sequencing. You know, and basically what I said in the article is that these techniques were great 25 years ago when the shuffles were really easy. But they're really not a good way to go currently.
So you think shuffle tracking and ace sequencing are a waste of time now?
Yes, I do. I mean, if you know how to do it, a guy had emailed me recently, and I said, you know, I was on a sequencing team that Al Francesco put together in the 90s.
Uh-huh.
And since that team folded in about the year 2000, since that time, I have only seen 4 shuffles that I thought were worth sequencing. And one of them was not in the United States. So that's over a period of 13 years. You know, these people who try to go ace sequence, these shuffles,
to go,
this
so
Vegas
we'll have,
shuffle that I call.
Munchkin will have to finish this one up later. I'll go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good night.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.